Many scientists are concerned about climate change, but a big part of their work involves air travel to conferences, which adds tons of greenhouse gases, particularly carbon dioxide, to the atmosphere. From the Pulse at member station WHYY, reporter Alan Yu found that more and more scientists are trying to change that.
A few years ago, climate scientist Nader Jivanji had just gotten his PhD.
So that's, you know, an early stage of your career. And of course, you want to establish yourself and you want to make sure that people know you and they know your work. And so for that, it's important to go to conferences.
He would go to 4, sometimes 5 conferences a year.
You know, I remember one year trying to, you know, cast a wide net and saying to myself, well, you know, there's a meeting of earth scientists in Europe, in Vienna.
He decided to go.
I think I stayed maybe 3 nights, made the flight out there, gave my 15-minute presentation, you know, went out to dinner, went and saw some talks.
It went well, he got what he wanted, but on the way back, something didn't feel right.
I was just struck by the extravagance of it all. The expense of the travel, the distance traveled, the short time that I was there.
He thought of the book Being the Change from fellow climate scientist Peter Kalmus about slow travel, flying less to reduce carbon emissions but also to savor the journey. The carbon footprint of flying can be as much as 3 times as doing the same trip by train. A researcher in Norway calculated the carbon footprint of scientists in his organization traveling for business. He found that just their business travel of 24 days produces more carbon dioxide than the global average of how much people produce in a whole year. Jivanji thought he should not go to as many conferences and pledged to fly less. This is definitely new among academics.
Right now feels to me, yeah, like a little bit of a tectonic shift where the ground shifts in a somewhat profound way.
One of the people behind this movement is Park Wilde, a food economist at Tufts University. He started a blog and a petition dedicated to getting academics to fly less.
I can taste success. Like, I feel so strongly that we can achieve the changes that we need to achieve without sacrificing what is most essential in our high quality of life.
More than 700 academics signed the petition, along with a handful of universities and associations. The goal is not to shame people for flying. It's for people to think carefully about whether they need to fly, and for universities and professional associations to track and report the carbon footprint of flying.
Colleagues will immediately start to think of the flights that they've taken that were most important, either for their career or for the good that they do in the world. I have colleagues who work on international hunger issues, and some flight that they take may be involved in saving many lives. Clearly, that is not the flight to give up.
Some academics question whether one person can actually make a difference by giving up one flight. It's not like the plane is going to stay on the ground just because some professors didn't buy tickets. Hannah Knox has thought about this a lot.
It either falls into it being a matter of personal choice and an individual decision, or seen as not really relevant because what we should really be doing is looking at the structural changes that need to be made to society as a whole.
She's an anthropologist at University College London, and she had given up flying for an entire year. Part of her research is about how scientists and activists reduce their carbon footprints. Some people have already worked on alternatives. Anand Pandian, an anthropologist at Johns Hopkins University, organized a rather unique panel last November of a conference of the American Anthropological Association in Vancouver.
Welcome, everyone, to Reimagining the Annual Meeting in an Era of Astonishing Reverb.
Instead of people flying from across the world to be in the same room, he asked panelists to put up short videos of their presentations so people could watch and discuss online.
Someone described it, I remember quite distinctly, as one of the best binge-watching experiences in anthropology.
This was more than just turning conferences into anthropology Netflix. For a previous conference, Pandian also helped organize local watch parties, so you could talk about the material with other anthropologists in your area. He says he did all this partly because of climate change, and partly because flying to conferences raises other barriers. Virtual conferences can include academics who can't afford the cost of flying, have family obligations, or face visa restrictions. Pandian says people watched his panel from all around the world, so lowering the barriers to conference travel is good for the climate, but it could also let more people have access to, share, and create knowledge. For Here and Now, I'm Alan Yu.